What do you want? Statement of purpose? Should I email you? Should I put this on your action item list?
Look.
You decide your own level of involvement.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
You are now listening to the Patriot Power Hour, the newest show of the Prepper Broadcasting Network. This live episode features the situational awareness you need to practice self-reliance and independence. Introducing your hosts, Ben, the Breaker of Banksters, and Future Dan, the editor of FutureDanger.com.
Hey everybody, Ben Breaker of Banksters, Cochrane. It's July 27th, 2021 with Future Dan. How you doing there, buddy?
Yeah, coming off a weekend of high adventure.
Lots of lessons learned and lots of fun meeting in person the Intrepid Commander and Nuke Guru, a.k.a. Dave Jones, NBC guy, as well as the Warden, Maria, and the family in Homestead, as well as... Future Larry, he said his name is now. Neighbor Larry, he liked your moniker there, apparently. And we had, you know, tons of fun and learned a lot, like I said. So I know that James did a show just recently talking about it, and so did Dave, the NBC guy. So we'll recap just a little bit, but not much. To be honest, what you need to do is when they repost it all, go listen to it or go back just a few days, and it's still all there. So... go listen to it. It speaks for itself, but it was a great time. I thought, I haven't listened to it, actually, the radio yet, but apparently it was good radio is what Intrepid Commander said.
So now that we're, I guess, 48 hours on, 72 hours since we're in the thick of it, how you feeling? What's your perception of lessons learned with that kind of little bit more chance to think about it, Ben?
Well... sorry, I was actually, we have a guest coming by, and I'm getting him all squared away, so I wasn't paying attention. I thought you were going to talk a little bit longer. Can you repeat the question?
72 hours later, how are you feeling? What did you learn?
Ah, man.
What does perspective provide for what we did this weekend?
Yeah, okay. First off, my legs pretty sore and stiff, but otherwise I'm feeling physically pretty well. It took me a couple days to recover from the sleep deprivation. When I was sleep deprived, I didn't feel that tired. But once we actually crashed, and especially by the time I got home to my nice soft bed, the last couple days, pretty tired, sleeping in, trying to rest. But I've also been going back to work, and I had a lot of other stuff going on. So that's just life, though. But
what would you estimate your amount of time doing that nonstop before you could grow comfortable to it?
And grow, you mean how far do you think I could stretch my limits if I practice that regularly?
All the exhaustion and all the discomfort you just mentioned. You know, I mean, if you have to be outside on the ground, eventually you grow accustomed to it to some degree that you're not now. I'm just asking what kind of time frame
okay. You
personally think might that take you?
I remember, and this is the only reference point I have, when I was 14, I spent like 6 or 7 straight days out in the wilderness in the mountains of Colorado. And by the end, I definitely felt total different mind space and I felt like I went through that conversion period, but it would take at least 3 or 4 days before you mentally start to switch. And I'm sure it would take a few weeks before you really like became a lifestyle, I guess.
Right. So this is more about just taking the first brush of,
yeah,
now we're doing this coming out of, you know, our relatively indoor lifestyle otherwise.
Yep. Yes, exactly. So we only went through, like I said, the first phase. And, you know, we could have kept going. It would have. The biggest thing I noticed wasn't my willpower or ability to stay awake. I was able to actually stay awake pretty easily, but I was making stupid mistakes and fumbling around. And on radio, especially when James was there on Saturday, I was trying. You know, we were on radio. I was trying to discuss things, and I was really stopped up. I was losing track of what we were talking about more often than I do on a regular show.
But that was the fatigue. You were getting interviewed in the midst of maximum fatigue.
Right. And I've never really had that much of a brain disconnect when I wasn't like drinking too much alcohol or something like that, right? I mean, I felt semi-punch drunk off only. No, not the shine, not the prepper shine, but the fatigue. I think the longest, I mean, we slept some during the weekend, especially after our trek through the woods, the tough one. But I think we went maybe, 30 hours without sleep.
Yeah.
I think that was the guess. So at hour 27, 28, 29, 30, I wasn't super tired, but I was like just not functioning well, mentally especially.
Yeah. What other dimensions could you say, a little perspective makes you think entirely, more broadly than you did perhaps the night it ended?
Yeah, the pack management and was a big part of it. But at a bigger picture, it's that I wasn't as prepared as I thought I was. And I knew that would be a result after I went through it and stress test my gear. But also physically, I wasn't as physically able as I thought. Maybe some of that was from being tired. But also just, especially during COVID, I've been sitting on my ass too much. So I need to reinvigorate that mentally. Need to get a little tougher and realize, some of these things that I brought along in the pack, for example, may not be worthwhile. Need to go without those creature comforts or redundancy. And just like I said, we had a couple tough adventures in the woods, but the last one, when we were especially gassed out and we hit those brambles that we talked about, I could just see how people can become fearful in the woods or anywhere else when you think you're lost or you're not sure which way you're going or darkness sets in. So that mental fortitude to keep going and also just like calm yourself down when you start to freak out is underestimated and something I gotta be more aware of for sure.
I know what the podcast that we did Friday morning would have included. They did include us talking about the tools we had. And we left out in a much more exhausted state without the right gear, without a proper analysis of the requirements. And had we given it a little bit more, proper thought, things that you did bring weren't redundant, weren't unnecessary. We had a saw, right?
Yeah.
And a larger knife that possibly could have helped. So we didn't bring them for the sake of knowing we were going over that elevation and it was going to be a tough climb anyways. So we went from 1,500 to, I believe, 1,650. Another 150 feet up, crested the ridge, and, worked our way down into very dense thicket. And, part of that was driven, we were talking about before the show, is choice of uniform, choice of camouflage. You brought black clothes, which were from the urban suburban escape zone at night on a black bike with a full moon, where getting into shadows, that what the black you're wearing probably was advantageous. Next day though, trying to move cross country and tall golden grass fields and deeply green, richly green thickets, the black was not the right choice.
No, and something I never would have guessed at all. Now, you knew this from your past experience, was I had a chest rig, and I was like, oh, man, this is perfect. I can put my mags here and my first aid, everything right on my chest. Guess what was the first thing that I was getting snagged in when I was going into that deep thicket? First thing, weighing me down. So I ended up putting that in my backpack pretty darn quickly, carrying that extra weight in an odd place and, maybe consider a different get-up, a different load-bearing equipment setup that I got my eye on, for example. That's just one example. I think being overprepared but also underprepared or not utilizing the resources you already did bring available. I mean, you said it perfectly. I had a 9-inch K-bar knife that could have worked decently. We had machetes available to us. I didn't bring my big machete along because that wasn't part of the gear pack, and probably would not have normally. But we didn't. Thank God you had the Leatherman, you know, packed away.
Which was not the – that in and of itself was a failure to not have a larger saw. So we used it, but not the right way, and it was, you know, very tiresome and kind of like not what you wanted to do. Yeah. Our alternative was crawling under the brush. I brought knee and elbow pads, but I just didn't know the terrain well enough to know that along the floor of the top of this range, littered with small stones. I mean, it's not large stone outcroppings anywhere across the top, but lots of little, you know, I say, you know, 2 to 3 foot wide stones that make crawling, you know, basically you can't stand it after a while.
Oh, yeah. Beats you up for sure. I feel like not just on that, but throughout the whole weekend, there were certain parts that we planned very well, like the bike ride. We literally had a big map and we marked every checkpoint, every major turn, and it went almost flawlessly.
Two wrong turns.
But the drive to there, we just assumed we would make it without a problem. We actually had almost as many wrong turns on the car in the urban area. So never assume anything, never take anything for granted. And same with that trek up the mountain,
right? Of course, we're doing it without GPS, and we said we'd try to do this from memory because this was our area that we're familiar with. So, you know, part of the test was how well do we recall this and how well do we get.
And we're trying to go down side roads too. Like, we know how to take the interstate or the big highways.
We avoided highways. Needed,
but we were like, no, we're going to take like the tertiary or even dirt roads where possible. But you know, that's much more difficult, especially if you haven't practiced. So yep.
Memorize your maps. Memorize your maps in your area is a takeaway right there.
And something you also said is the sixth sense too. Sometimes if you feel like something's wrong, take a double check. And I think a good example is when I got on the bike first, and we went about 2.8 miles, and we thought we were at the turn, but we were about 3/4 of a mile early. And I didn't memorize the bike or the map enough to know the exact mileage. That's the first mistake. But second mistake, and even bigger, was in my gut. I was like, that's a little early. I think I should be going another 5 or 10 minutes probably. But, and I swear it wasn't just because I was lazy and wanted to just have you bike. That's not why. I promise. I just didn't really listen to that voice in the back of my head. I was just like, okay, well, this is probably the turn. And it's like, it was in my subconscious. It was back in my mind. I need to focus on that and take action or more fully focus. Like, hey, wait a second. This feels wrong. Why does it feel wrong? Let me be totally sure. A couple of those would have gone a long way.
And the remedy is, you know, many, many more hours and miles riding roads, just kind of memorizing the grid, memorizing this road's after that road. I know this turn. I've been here before. Mm-hmm. And hitting roads on a bug out that you've never been on before is going to be challenging.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially at nighttime. And, but we have a lot more, I have a lot more lessons learned and other stories to tell. Maybe we'll get on to it here in a little bit, but I mean, we're already partway through the show. We got to go to break with the Future Danger News Blitz coming up and a special guest at the bottom of the hour. You will not want to miss this, ladies and gentlemen. You will not want to miss this. PrepperBroadcasting.com. This is the Patriot Power Hour. We'll be back.
The situation around Syracuse is one of utter devastation. Just like the other nuked cities, the danger area of highest contamination extends out 20 miles from the blast zone. All the communities immediately around the city have major problems. There is a mandatory evacuation order for the city itself and some of the immediate surrounding areas. They are testing the water, air, and soil constantly for contamination. This excerpt is from the book titled The Prepper, Part 1, The Collapse by Carl A.D. Brown. Go to Amazon.com today and explore one family's journey through the collapse. Again, The Prepper by Carl A.D. Brown.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network. So are you ready to rock? Well, don't ever stop. We are on a crash course of freedom and we can go as long as we want. Yeah. Jump fast.
Patriot Power Hour, live on this final show of July 27th, 2021. It's the second segment. You know what that means. News Blitz. FutureDanger.com. Without further ado, let's start on the right-hand column and work our way left. Urgent COVID-related news. There's a claim that COVID vaccines are producing symptoms of Parkinson's and other neurodegenerative diseases and disorders. Vaccinated cruise passenger tests positive for COVID-19. The CDC, this is breaking and urgent news today. CDC says vaccinated people should wear masks indoors in places with high COVID transmission rates, including K-12 schools. Higher COVID rate found in densely populated California counties with higher vaccination rate. Vaccinated people account for 75% of coronavirus infections in Singapore.
Not working,
or is it? Moving on, president to force federal employees to take COVID vaccine. I've also seen New York City move the same way. Oh, right here, New York, San Francisco, California state officials, and Virginia as well.
No, it's the VA.
Oh, the VA. Okay. Well, I'm sure Virginia will be right behind. The VA implementing COVID-19 vaccine mandates. First federal, yep, there it is right there, to supplement. First federal COVID-19 shot mandate introduced by Department of Veterans Affairs. Water turns pink in Argentina lagoon. Heavy wildfire smoke linked to increased COVID-19 risks. Bird die-off. I know in the Midwest, especially Indiana, where good old Purdue is, guess what? Lots of birds dying, being infected. There's some weird disease as well. 911 outages reported along the East Coast. These are low level, but interesting to watch and be prepared for if they got worse. Deadly floods and mudslides in Tajikistan. There is some crazy weather out there, but it's a crazy world. Always has been. Moving to economics, $1 trillion in COVID relief is still unspent as congressional majority seeks more. Still looking at 128% government to gross domestic product ratio, but that'll be updated with the Q2 numbers in the next few weeks. We should go find that exact date. But we're going to start seeing Q2 numbers ending July 30th soon. Should be interesting. Gasoline, $3.15 a gallon in the red zone, but not at all-time highs, but still putting pressure slowly but surely on folks. The consumer price index, 1.07% quarterly. So they cannot hide that anymore. Still out of the red zone, but creeping up for sure. And accelerating per this article, consumer goods price increases accelerating. Whiff of danger as market gains lack scope. On the other hand, the market rebounded from its recent crash almost as quickly as all time. So it's still strong. Jobless claims, 69,000 above expectations, 419,000 weekly. Not in the red zone, but, you know, a lot of the labor participation rate has fallen. Let you know that. Let's move on. National security, geopolitics, military, etc. French intelligence warned State Department about Wuhan lab in 2015. Over 40,000 mostly unvaccinated aliens released by federal government skip out on ICE appointments. So the great majority of them unvaccinated. If that's supposed to be such a crazy thing, well, 40,000 of them released by the federal government, supposed to come back for appointments, did not. Chinese human surveillance network discovered in North Atlanta. CDC, which is in Atlanta, of course, withdraws fraudulent communist Chinese testing protocol used to falsify COVID positives. Department of Justice drops charges against 5 Chinese scientists accused of infiltrating universities for intelligence gathering. Let's read that one more time. The DOJ drops charges against 5 Chinese scientists accused of infiltrating universities, U.S. universities, for intelligence gathering. Israel conducts airstrikes deep inside Iraq. Relatively low level, but still, got to keep an eye on the Middle East at all times. First column, Liberty. CDC caught deleting thousands of COVID vaccine deaths. When we were on the SGT report a couple weeks ago, there was 9,000 plus. Let's just say that the number is less now.
Yes, since then, yep. He pointed it out for everybody first, though.
It definitely good got job, some attention. Sean.
Yeah.
30, 40,000 views just on his YouTube. House majority blocked bill to declassify intel on COVID origins. Twitter suspends 2020 election audit accounts for multiple states.
Today.
Wow. Media ignores dozens of peer-reviewed science papers proving that face masks are not only ineffective, but also dangerous. Capitol Police officer lies to Congress, says fellow officer died from January 6th riot injuries. When their own family, and I believe even Washington Post has reported previously that that was false. But they said that in Congress. This is creepy. I don't even like covering these, but we have to. Minnesota fourth graders told to keep survey with questions about sexuality a secret from parents. I think even back in my day, and I'm not even that old, and grew up in somewhat of a liberal area, they wouldn't have even asked you that with permission. Now they're doing it and keeping it from you. Okay. 157,000 or more illegal ballots were cast during the Wisconsin 2020 election. That's within the winning margin. No guarantee. But I got a feeling most of the illegal ballots is probably not for Trump. It's within the winning margin. Something to be reviewed in great detail. Tangible, significant. Wisconsin state representative orders cyber forensic examination of 2020 election. Hope that goes through in full force. Massive data breach exposes personal data of 700 million users of Microsoft-owned LinkedIn. Wow. 700 million users' personal data exposed related to your job and your education and everyone you've ever met at college and all that and at work. Great. With that, Future Dan, that is the News Blitz for July 27th, 2021. What do you think?
I think LinkedIn already gives away all of that information if you allow it to, right? I mean, people put their bios out there. Part of it's seeing about bios. I'm thinking that that personal leaked or lost information was not necessarily the public-facing stuff, but other details that you really don't want out there, phone numbers and stuff.
Oh, for sure. Well, it goes a lot of ways. First off, you're right. That data is available for folks, but maybe not in a form that could be data mined at an extreme level. That's very lucrative.
Like, you can put your phone number out there. It's totally supposed to be, you know, just whatever your settings are. But, you know, there's recruiters. Recruiters will have their phone numbers, or at least numbers that can reach them, available. But most people don't do that, right? Most people don't have email addresses. It's just open to people.
Right.
And, you know, unless you're linked with them and they choose to allow that for – that's how LinkedIn works, right? But, you know, it was probably inevitable, and I believe LinkedIn was already hacked 10 years ago by the Russians.
Yeah, well, all this – yeah, any data you put in, like, anything like real, that, or pretty Russians. Much any data on the internet at all, you got to assume will be leaked or fully leaked at some point. But now, instead of them having to go in and be your friend or at least go in there and look at a public profile, they can just mass robocall you off of a sheet with hundreds of millions of people instantly and do other things. And, you know, that's just one example of surveillance state out of control. What I mean, there's so much other. But we are running kind of close on time, having a guest call in. I'm going to keep it a surprise. We've come this far. It's going to be a surprise, but friends.
We've tried before and technically kaput, so we're going to try.
That's true. Yeah, that's not jinxing.
Give them the number, Ben. What is the Patriot Power Hour number?
Perfect plug.
This is for anybody who wants to call in and comment on our appearance on the SGT report 2 weeks ago as well. We didn't have it handy last week, but we got it now.
There you go. Or for... If you're a member of the continuity, saw us there, or liked or disliked Ozzer Highland, want to make fun of us. Either way, here's our phone number. And if you're listening on recording on archive right now, by the way, we are a live show, 8 p.m. every Tuesday. So if you're listening on this on archive, next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, you can call this number. We'll have it available from now on. Okay? 303-731-3604. One more time, 303-731-3604. And in the description of this show, you can find our Twitter handles and emails. So there's three ways to reach out to each of us.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Special
guest coming up. In the meanwhile, a quick plug for Greenovative. There's still a few days left. For Greenovative, we actually saw Dave Jones's only. I don't think we saw all of his Greenovative gear, but I don't think we saw the water filter, which I was actually probably most impressed or most interested in checking out. But we saw some of his other power cells and all that. Really cool.
Multi-sized battery recharge.
Yeah.
800 recharge.
PPH20. PPH20.
Greenovative.
Greenovative.com. PPH20. Say 20%. We'll be right back.
Americans are still not protected against COVID-19. And we are seeing more infections among those who are unvaccinated. I issued a Surgeon General's advisory on the dangers of health misinformation. Surgeon General advisories are reserved for urgent public health threats. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Misinformation poses an imminent and insidious threat to our nation's health. The mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor. Health misinformation is false, inaccurate, or misleading information about health. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Misinformation takes away our freedom. The mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor. Misinformation has led people to resist wearing masks. What we call disinformation. We need an all-of-society approach. Checking sources before they share. Tell me where the freaks at. If you're not sure, don't share. Today, the Rockefeller Foundation is announcing a $13.5 million commitment. This is just the beginning. We expect more from our technology companies. Take action against misinformation super spreaders. Bringing individuals and organizations together. Let the leaders lead, preachers preach, welcome to the service. Nearly every death we are seeing now from COVID-19 could have been prevented. Did we do this for a purpose just to keep that fire burning? Kids are depending on all of us to get vaccinated. And we don't need no water, let that mother burn. For more and more patients with COVID-19 who never got vaccinated. Because they were misled by misinformation. Healthier information environment. There is disinformation that is coming from bad actors. Not sharing is caring. Misinformation literally costing us our loved ones. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers. Technology companies have a particularly important role. Much, much more has to be done, and we can't wait. It's costing people their lives.
Tell me where the freaks at. We are in regular touch with these social media platforms. We've increased disinformation research and tracking. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook. We're helping get trusted content out there. COVID community court. Robust enforcement strategy. Information travels quite quickly on social media platforms. Information spreads too quickly. We have empowered, engaged, funded local voices to combat misinformation that's traveling online or traveling, unfortunately, out of the mouths of elected officials.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
Bottom of the hour, and guess what time it is? It's time for a very special guest. Without further ado, the one, the only, Dave from the Gunmetal Armory, fellow host here on Prepper Broadcasting Network. Dane, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am here.
Awesome. You are coming in loud and clear. Thank you for joining us tonight, buddy.
Yeah, no worries, man. No worries. I'm just kind of hanging out here. Just got home from work, and my wife is eating pizza in front of me, and yeah, just kind of hanging out.
There you go. Well, appreciate your time. I know, you know, after work time is very short supply these days, so you know, we'll make it efficient for you. We won't blabber too much. I know you got a lot of questions for us. We got some for you, but future Dan has something first.
Dane, what do you got coming up on the next installment of Gunmetal Armory?
I think what we're going to do next is we're going to do more questions, like Ask the Gunsmith questions. We had a bunch more that we didn't get to last week, so I think we're going to go do some more of those next week.
Awesome.
Or actually this week.
Nice. You know, I've gone back into kind of your archives and listened to shows from months or even years ago, as far back as I can find, because it's kind of, a lot of it's evergreen. So I love your show, man.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate it. It's just, it's, you know how it is with podcasts, man. You know, it's kind of a labor of love. You just do it because you enjoy it and you've got like something, maybe a like a subject on your mind. You just got to get it out, man. You got to let out that knowledge somehow, you know?
Absolutely. I know exactly how that is. You know, you put in the work and the fruit of your labor does pan out eventually, even though it doesn't seem like it. You do it for the right reasons, for the love, and for the right, you know, fight the good fight. It's all, it's all good. So, now, for those who listen deeply at Ozzer Highland, you might have noticed when we were at the range, I was shooting my AK prone position, and we had a weapons malfunction. We had my, well, first off, it's a Wazzer 10. And you can, as the expert, can detail us to us why this Romanian import by Century Arms is not of the greatest quality. But what occurred was the dust cover, which has, you know, a housing or a hole in it where the there's a button to depress, pop the dust cover off, and then you can disassemble the weapon from there on. Well. Mm-hmm. That metal failed and kind of blew out. There was a release, and the dust cover just popped off on the range.
After two shots.
On the third shot is when it actually popped off, I believe.
No, it was two shots. I was standing there. It was two shots, took the cover off, and then...
And then the third one out of the chamber, when I slapped the safety on, it seemed...
You tried to slap the safety on, and the, somehow the bolt had been to the rear. That caused it to ride forward. There was a round chamber. You were not, you know, aimed directly downrange. You're within range limits, but you're off to the right and had an accidental discharge from this thing. What do you make of that? How, what probably happened here?
Well, it's hard to know without being there, you know, without actually examining the firearm before and after. But those the recoil the recoil spring assembly, it only operates, you know, two ways, you know, front and back, right, off that spring. And if it's not fully depressed through that that square hole in the rear of the dust cover, then, you know, it's not going to be seated fully, right? And then of course in the rear trunnion, you've got that slot that the bottom part of the top cover sits in.
Yeah.
And then toward the front, right below the rear sight, you've got that other slot, that other channel the front part of the top cover sits in. Now, it's a very, very common thing for when that top cover is put back on that people will not get the front of the top cover all the way seated in the front, in right below the rear sight. It can feel like it is, but it's not always seated all the way. So you push that in, you press down to lock in the recoil assembly at the rear, and it won't go all the way back into that square slot, okay? So that means that the spring is slightly depressed, basically like you would do with your thumb to take that top cover off, all right? So your top cover is slightly depressed, okay? Then you fire a couple of times, it may push it back into where it needs to be, or it may cause it to deform the top cover and cause it to fail and eject that top cover. That could have been what happened.
I mean, just gut reckoning, that sounds exactly what happened. I can't guarantee.
I think you nailed it.
I know that we had given it a visual inspection. A few of us had looked at it. We even adjusted the manual sights. We had iron sights. Kind of screwed around with it a little bit. Maybe I depressed it on accident before I shot it. Maybe it was just very slightly unseated and we just didn't see. We didn't know what we were looking for. It's my fault. It's my weapon. I don't know if that's the case or if just in the past it had been and it weakened the metal. Because what happened is the perfect square, well, the bottom line of the perfect square is just blown out just a little bit, and that was enough for, you know, the force of it to fly out. So the actual metal stamped dust cover was deformed, and Not even that much, just kind of dented. There's a little bit of a sharp edge, but...
So, Dane, do you think you could hammer that back into place, reassemble this weapon, and it's just fine?
Oh, I would, yeah. Like, not even kidding at all, dude. I would put that on, like, a piece of aluminum or a piece of metal, maybe the side of a vise. Not a vise. A vise might work. Or, like, an anvil, something small like that. Anything that's about that same shape, hammer it, you should be just fine. You should be just fine. As long as you get that thing level and where it will fit in that slot in the rear trunnion, you should be just fine. Otherwise, if it doesn't fit, it's like $24 for a new one. No big deal.
Yep. I was looking for a new one, and I wanted to talk with you first and diagnose to see if there was another potential issue or you had heard. But, I mean, I agree.
Would you go about rebuilding this Romanian $400 AK, Dane, in the first place?
What do you mean rebuild? Like put in a new barrel, put in like new trigger system, like trick it out, or what are we talking?
Well, we're talking about the cover right now, but that could have a rail system on top, I assume. Mm-hmm. So, probably for more than $24, but not much more.
I don't I try not to say anything bad about any other country's guns. Let's break it down. There are certain countries that make AKs a lot better than other countries, right? So the Romanian Wasser 10s, we all know, just like you said at the beginning, that Century didn't do the best job when they built those. They were building them for mass. They weren't, for mass quantity. They weren't building them for quality. Okay. That being said, the AK only costs about $25 to make in Russia. I know that some of the listeners may get pissed about that, the fact that they sell them for way more over here, but they're $25 a piece to make in Russia.
16 times as much.
Yeah. So some countries make much, much better AKs than others. Some have tighter tolerances. Some have thicker receivers. The Romanians did not have as thick of receivers for their AKs. Their barrels, the only barrels for the Romanians that were really, really good were the Romanian Guard AKs. You'll see a G stamped in the front trunnion right below the rear sight if it's a Romanian Guard AK.
Okay.
Those ones have really nice barrels because the Romanian Guard was never deployed. So, well, very rarely anyway. So the Romanian Guard AKs are really nice. But the Wasser 10s generally, I think they have Green Mountain barrels in them, if I remember correctly, because you have to have, because of the 922R bullshit laws, sorry about my cussing, but you have to have a certain amount of American parts when you're building guns for parts kits. It's just some freaking bullcrap, Democrat law. Sorry if there's any Democrats listening. Sorry about that.
Probably not, but you never know.
I don't got anything against those people. I just don't like people who make any laws that mess with my Second Amendment.
There you go. Yeah.
Anyways, so...
Hey, Dane.
Just like they're... What's up?
So I want to take where we're at with what you know about this particular weapon. Yeah, you could... Mm-hmm. What I hear is you could start adding to it, but it might be... wiser idea to start with a new weapon. But let's go back to this weekend during the exercise. As your Highland, okay. Ben brought this weapon, obviously, because that's where it was mm-hmm. damaged. It was mixed in a two-man team with an AR, a long-range bolt-action 7.62 rifle, and a
mm-hmm.
357 Magnum pistol, Glock. What do you think of that mix of armament for a two-man team? Moving like we did, about 25 miles an hour on bike, later, several kilometers in the woods.
Well, I'm a big fan of caliber and weapon compatibility.
Yeah.
Okay. So if my family and the guys that I work with, we all carry either Glock 21s or Glock 17s. We all carry AKs or ARs, and those are in 7.62x39 or 5.56. That being said, if someone needs a long-range rifle, like you're talking about there, generally that's going to be in 308. Okay, there's nothing wrong with having a plethora of weaponry. In fact, it could be a good thing because if you run into any ammo, you can harvest it. If you've got the if you've got the gun for it. But for me, if I was running a class or I was doing an exercise like that, I want compatibility depending on how many targets we're going to be practicing against and stuff like that. That being said, if that's all you got, then freaking practice your heart out, dude. Do it. That's the way I look at it.
So we had four weapons in four different incompatible calibers. And if you were doing a two-person team, first two questions. How many calibers would you try to aim to bring that down to instead of carrying four distinct? And about the mix, the 357, 5.56 AR, 308 rifle for long distance, you know, 600 meters plus, although we didn't see many vistas, you know, fields of fire weren't there for that. And also the AK in question, AKA the blown up AK. How about the mix in ranges and capability for two guys trying to be able to be prepared to defend at all ranges? And then also how many round, you know, what calibers would you bring that down to and how would you do that?
At the very least, I would match my pistol calibers at the very least. Okay. Because we all know what pistols are for. They're to fight your way back to your rifle, right? We all know what that's the whole meaning behind a pistol. Get to that rifle so you can actually cause some decent damage. Now, that being said, if you run an ammo with rifle, you got the pistol, okay? But the pistol calibers, those should always be compatible if possible, okay? I know you've got the 45 and 9mm, you know, argument that keeps going on. But I think I would probably just limit it to 9mm or 45 far as the pistols go. I would
get, 357. You know, yeah, that's kind of a 357 was too rare. What was the downside to 357 Glock?
What is 357 SIG? Is that the caliber the Glock was in?
Yep, exactly. Glock 31.
Okay. That is an extremely kind of niche caliber. It's pretty rare. 357 SIG is great for going through windshields of vehicles, but I would go with a normal caliber, one that you're going to find in almost any sporting goods store.
Right.
You know. What was the other pistol?
There was just one pistol, but then there was a mix of rifles, modern semi-automatics, AK, okay. AR.
Right. So your AK, you're going to have the, you know, 100 to 300 meter range roughly with that. And then the bolt action, you know, you're going to have, out to 800 yards, 700 meters. You know, you'll have a pretty decent range with that 308. But you could always get an AR-10 or even an AR-15 and still push to 500 yards or, you know, 600 yards with an AR-15.
And then it would be compatible round with that AK or no?
No. That's a 5.56 AR. I'm talking about a 5.56 AR. But if you wanted to go with a compatible, like a longer range, let's see, the 7.62x39, the one that the AK runs, is not a very good long range caliber. It's really, really heavy for what it is and for the amount of propellant that's behind it. So, you know, I've seen guys that'll use, have you ever heard of the Iraqi Tabuk?
I have not.
T-A-B-U-K. Okay. It's basically, imagine an AK with a 20 inch barrel and a scope cover on, or a scope on, basically. It's, and a nicer, muzzle brake on there. Okay, it's basically like a DMR for an AK. You guys know what DMR is, yeah?
I do not. I'm not okay, big outside of the AR world, I gotta be honest.
Okay, so like designated marksman's rifle, you guys have heard of those, right?
Oh, the role of the weapon within the rifle squad, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like a, you know, it's like a slightly accurized AR-15 if it's in our military, like a DMR, right. Slightly accurized AR-15.
This is an AK version that was in Iraq.
Yes. It's an accurized AK, basically. That'll allow a little bit further range, gives you a scope, gives you a little bit more velocity with a longer barrel, and so on. If you want to stick to 7.62x39, you'll need something with a slightly longer barrel, but you're still not going to get a whole lot of range out of it, not like you would with that bolt action. So I would, if you want to stick to the same caliber as far as the rifles go and you want to go AK, I would stick to shorter range engagements then. You know, don't push anything past, you know, a couple hundred yards at the most.
So really,
think about it, you're not going to be able to see them anyway.
Yeah, I was about to say, well, with I got a couple questions for you. First off, I'm considering, I will try to put some decent repairs into this with my current platform, but I'm considering going AR-10 if I want to stick with the 7.62 caliber. So do you have a recommendation on that, number one, for you know, manufacturer, et cetera? And number two, it sounds like maybe a red dot or, you know, not a long-range scope is maybe more appropriate. What do you think for optics?
For an AR-10?
Yes.
I would go with something like a Vortex Strike Eagle. You'll get, it's about a 2 to 8 magnification.
Okay.
And it's got a decent size bell on there. It's got a decent size objective lens. I forget the exact, I think it's 44, something like that. It's what I have on my AR-10, and they're really, really nice, man. They're not terribly expensive. I think they're nice. In the $500 range.
Okay.
But I would go with some kind of a low power variable optic like that. You'll see a lot of articles on that. Bear Independent, he's one of the guys on YouTube that I like to watch. He's been talking about low power variable optics at the moment. Those are really, really good. They make a ton of them. Like, the Marine Corps really likes to use the ACOG. You know, the Tribicon ACOG?
Right.
They love that thing, and that thing is only 4x magnification. But, you know, you can still reach out, you know, a couple hundred yards, no problem with that thing.
I carried one most of my career infantry. Yeah, they're good.
So you're well-versed.
Yeah, 600 meters with an M4 was certainly possible with the ACOG. I liked it a lot. Question I have for you about this AR-10 that Ben's thinking about, how do you deal with the front? Would you put bipod on it, a four-stock with a vertical grip, a three-quarter grip? What might be the right answer there?
Well, that depends on what kind of tactics you're going to work with when it comes to it. Bipods are nice, but they are heavy, you know, unless you go with something like the Magpul ones. But even the Magpul ones, they can get heavy over time. And unless you're going prone or you're popping onto a hill or you're popping into a window or something like that, that bipod may just get in your way.
Well, I was thinking said, if that Iraqi, you know, Accurized AK, I'm sure there's others, that one being a representative of the class, were available, rather than bring a 308 bolt action long range rifle, in our terrain that we saw, an Accurized either 7.62, either AR or AK platform with a bipod might be a good substitute, then bring you some medium range capability as well. What do you think, Dave?
100%. Yes, I love that. I love that. And the other thing about it is you can easily carry the bipod in the backpack and just pop it on whenever you're ready with like picked any rail or something like that, dude. You don't have to keep it on the gun the whole time.
Hey, real quick, we wanted to ask you about the French resistance tactics that you had on previous shows. I love that stuff. Can you plug the book where you picked up that knowledge so others can read it?
Let's see. Which book? What were you talking about? The book where the French resistance tactics were in?
You spoke on them on several of your shows, Gunmetal Armory.
There is a book called, oh gosh, where did I put it? It is actually the SOE training manual.
Okay.
It is the manual that was written by the British Special Operations Executive during World War II, before any special forces existed. They wrote that book. So they would have those tactics, and they were the ones that would go over there and they would take their guys and train them and use those kind of people for those tactics. So if you look online, you find any of the SOE training manuals, but make sure that you get the ones that are complete, because they're going to have the knife techniques in them. The ones that you buy from Great Britain won't have the knife techniques that are used with the Fairman sights.
Right, right. Awesome. Ben, any last questions? Do you want to come back to final AK questions or anything we did this weekend with Dane?
Actually, I know. I'm just getting as much advice as I can for my potential purchases. Oh, man. What?
Call me anytime, bro.
I know, right? I was about to say, I don't want to waste my own time for this.
Bitcoin's 40 grand tonight. You could afford to sell a little bit.
No, Bitcoin keeps going up. Might be dedicated to this. You know, I'm going to, you know, do some shopping and check it out. But I guess, where do you think shotguns fill in the role? Is that only home defense, or is that in the field, or maybe an urban environment?
Two-man team.
It would be helpful, but out in the woods, maybe shotguns not too helpful.
On a two-man team like we did this weekend.
A two-man, yeah, two-man team, let's say.
100% agree with him on that. Two-man team, it's that the shotgun shines in CQB, dude. There's no way around that.
Substitute for the pistol?
That's why they use in trench warfare. You know, say again?
If it was a weight constraint, would you substitute the shotgun for the pistol?
Like a handgun?
Yeah.
For me, the only way I would even think of substituting a shotgun for a pistol, or a pistol for a shotgun, rather, would be if it was a 45. You know, the 45 ACP has the world record for one-shot stops. So I would go with that one if I was going to try to replace my shotgun. But honestly, nothing really compares to a shotgun when it comes to close quarters.
Well, in the terrain we're in, up in the mountains and in the woods, limited, you know, carrying capacity. If you have to make the choice, I'm going to bring a 357 Magnum or one of the standard calibers you spoke about for, you know, close-in self-defense. Can a shotgun fill that role? Would you recommend it or stick with a pistol if you had to make the choice?
I would definitely go with the pistol because I've already got my rifle. Like, you guys already have a rifle. So I would definitely go with the pistol then because, you know, the shotgun is just going to be extra weight, you know? That's just me.
Definitely. And after, I mean, we were taking all this equipment on our back on electric bicycles in this scenario. So taking more than a couple long guns and a pistol or two and the ammo on our person, they kind of run out pretty quick. It's not a video game. If you realize that quick.
Yeah, y'all were tired, huh?
Just a little bit.
Still are a little bit, yeah. Just
a little bit, so.
How could you not be? You know? I mean, but that's training, right? That's training, right? I mean, we push ourselves as hard as we can go, right?
We try to put our put our feet on the ground instead of just being all talk on a podcast, get out and exercise. And got hit with a lot of cold, hard realities. But go ahead. Anybody who hadn't caught that Azure Highland Series, a PBN special this past weekend, contact us if you got questions. We tried to be clear on what we were talking about. Dane, thanks for joining us tonight, man.
Of course. Of course. Anytime, guys. I'm sorry about missing you guys before. You know, I know we tried to get this going at one other time. But any other time, guys, anytime, you just let me know.
Oh, this absolutely worked out even better because of the AK and all the questions we have now. So it's all great, all great. Hey, where can, obviously here on PBN, people can listen to you, but what days and anywhere else people can follow you?
Just at the moment, it's just Prepper Broadcasting Network. I'm on Thursday nights, usually around 6 o'clock Pacific time or Arizona time. You know, I know that can be a little wonky when it comes to daylight savings.
What time is it there, Broadcasting
Network. I'm no armory.
What time is it your time right now?
It is 6 o'clock my time right now.
It's 3 hours difference.
All right, Arizona time is Pacific time now, but not always. Just joking.
Woo! Not always.
Dave, thanks so much, buddy.
Actually, I may have to get you guys on my podcast so I can get
absolutely.
Some financial advice.
We're down for that. All right, folks, we'll see you next week. Patriot Power Hour, signing off. Life tearing at the seams.
Thank you for listening to the Prepper Broadcasting Network, where we promote self-reliance and independence. Tune in tomorrow for another great show and visit us at PrepperBroadcasting.com.